Hello, and welcome back to How We're Putting Two and Two Together, a series of conversations with the cast of the audio drama Putting Two and Two Together. My name is Peter Cosmas Sophronis, and I am the writer and director of the series. Today I'm talking with Adam Haru, who plays the part of David Sharp. Welcome, Adam.
Thank you very much, Peter. Glad to be able to talk to you.
One of the questions I've been asking the cast members is, how did you join the production?
So I made a point of going back and looking at our earlier conversations, mostly over Messenger and email. And I think you and I had first spoken about this at the holiday party at the Quantum Power Players Theater. And so then we had an exchange not too long after that. And, you know, I was definitely interested in being a part of it. We talked about the role and David at the time. And, you know, I felt like there was a lot of really great stuff as an actor to want to try and be a part of. And so you were arranging the initial table read.
Yep, the crowded basement table read, which you weren't able to make.
Which I was not able to make, which based on a lot of the stories that I heard from that,
you missed a fun party.
Yeah, I felt like I really missed out, you know, family commitments getting in the way, unfortunately.
Now that I think about it, I actually read your role for that. And I had just come off a really bad cold, so my voice was really, really scratchy. So we had this really raspy sounding David. You know, I could barely talk. I'm surprised I was able to do this, particularly since we read 15 episodes that day. But luckily, you were available to take the role full time after that fact.
Yeah, I know we had you, me, and Dan to run some of those early scenes because I think you had just found Dan.
I had a different Tommy for the read through who decided not to continue. And luckily, I was able to find Dan. But I just wanted to make sure that the two of you meshed, and oh boy, did you guys mesh.
Yeah. And that's the thing throughout this whole process. You know, a lot of the people who are a part of this were already friends or people that I knew. And so it was a lot easier to kind of build the rapport as characters. Of course, that's very different in season one and season two because of how the production is.
As my listeners know by now, season one was recorded in a group setting. Most of the actors were there. Occasionally, someone was missing and got dubbed in later. But on the whole, we recorded the scenes in multiple passes as if we were performing it live. But season two, between some of our cast members moving away and with COVID hitting, we had to do it separately. I mean, I was already planning on doing it that way anyway, to some degree, but it forced the hand further.
Yeah.
So in your experience, tell me about how each type worked for you, which worked better, which worked worse.
It's such a different experience, right? I talk about the camaraderie with the people who are part of it. And when we get together in that group setting, particularly in the scenes where there's more levity, I think it's very easy to kind of generate that sort of emotion, right? Because you're there, you're making eye contact with people, and you're really kind of cueing off of not just what they say, but there's the body language element. I'm reminded of watching behind-the-scenes documentaries of voice actors, like on when they're doing Pixar or whatever, and all the actors really get into it, right? And you can even see me right now, Peter. I'm very animated with my hands, right?
Same here.
And
so
it's
the worst thing. I mean, I'm constantly watching my hands and like, stop it.
But that's when you're there in person, you really imbue yourself into the role. And so, you know, we get to watch each other do it. And we make a lot of jokes in between. And we end up probably wasting a lot of time, but having a really good time doing it. And then with season two, as you said, a lot of differences because of just the way the world is right now. It's a very sort of solo experience. But what is really interesting is being able to work with you directly as the director. We record the same line multiple times, a few times in a row. And you just sort of, as an actor and with the way that I approach things, I just sort of make an immediate choice and go with it and string those together. But then I get that real-time feedback from you. Try it like this, and maybe try it like that. And in a group setting, it's a little bit more of a challenge there because now you're trying to focus on a bunch of different things that have happened in that scene. So in some respects, it's almost great as an actor because I have that dedicated focus.
As an editor, it's great because I can have, you know, more than five, I can have a dozen takes if we need it. And then I have that much more of an arsenal to work with when I'm splicing together. Whereas in a group setting, if we're only doing three passes, I have three takes. If something's really off, I'll do more takes. But for season one, I had three takes of a scene. Season two, I had at the bare minimum five, but I could have as many as a couple dozen if needed.
Right.
I remember recording Kathy. There was just one simple line, and I knew in my head how I wanted to hear it, but it took her probably about 30 times just to get that one word.
You Kubricked her. How could you?
Yeah.
But no, I mean, it's really an interesting and different kind of challenge as an actor to go through that, because you don't have anybody to react off of, but you can almost kind of focus on yourself more in some respects.
You touched upon your process. Of the four people that I've recorded for this chunk of interviews, you're unique in your approach. Dan and Chris, Tommy and Anthony, were the type where they read the entire season end to end, so they had a sense of where it was going. Jenny, who plays Rachel, she read only her scenes, so she only knows what Rachel knows. So listening as an audience member, everything that doesn't involve Rachel is new to her. Mm-hmm. You, describe your process there.
Don't do this at home, kids. So I'm an inveterate sight reader. So I like having the script in front of me and almost sort of reacting in real time, which in some respects, I'll be really honest, is a little unfair for you, Peter, because there may be a specific reaction that maybe you're hoping to hear kind of based on how something is written. And so when I read it the first time, it may be I haven't really fully processed and internalized that. But I like that sort of spontaneity, if you will, of mm-hmm. going through it that way.
But on the other side of it, there are a few points in which I throw in a curve. And because you don't know what that curve is, you react exactly how I would expect you to react. There's a moment in an episode which hasn't aired yet, so I can't really comment on it. But there was one that I completely messed with you. And the result of it was priceless. But
Well, I will say, too, that it's brought, as a listener, a lot of joy for me, where, again, you know, I'm focused on just the part that I've got, and it's sort of all new to me as I'm going through it. But then going back and listening and hearing all of the story developments for everybody else and how the plot lines are kind of coming together and things that I'm aware of but don't have as intimate a connection with, how it all starts to weave together. It's super gratifying. Yeah, I'm a big fan of the show.
How does it feel hearing yourself having conversations that you really didn't have?
Well, I'll say this. I hate hearing my voice, for one, but it is a real testament to the work that you put into this of how seamless it all seemed. You probably noticed from time to time that, all right, maybe it doesn't sound like they're being recorded in quite the same way. And maybe that's obviously one of the necessary sacrifices since we can't all record together.
Exactly.
But taking that aside, it all feels very natural. And I think you've done a really great job of, there's a lot of natural overlap in how people talk. And that doesn't necessarily make it for great audio drama. Right, because I can make it a little hard to hear everything. But I think you've done a really nice job of splicing it all together in a way that feels very naturalistic.
The poker game, it was just in one of the last episodes before the break, no one was recorded simultaneously. So to have that banter going on, even everybody laughing and saying something different at mm-hmm. the same time, that took a lot of choreographing to get it to work that well.
Yeah. In listening to that, that was one of the things that really stood out to me. I was like, oh, that was very, very smoothly pulled off.
I admit there were a few re-records, most notably with some of Jason's lines, which I had the luxury of being able to do very easily. Mm-hmm. You know, splice that in there. If there were any seams that needed to be done, I knew that if Jason was in the scene, I could invent a line to bridge a gap. Mm-hmm. Tell me about David.
David's an interesting character. And the thing that really kind of drew me to him beyond just sort of the natural tension and friction that comes up between how his relationship with Rachel and Tommy has come to pass and how that evolves, but his change in growth over time. And I think that's what I really like about season two, is it really starts to fill in more of the David from before.
Which I'm loving.
The thing that I was a little concerned about when I was first doing him was just, you know, I didn't want him to sound dull, right? He's an accountant. And I didn't want to come across as just a dull accountant. And of course, there's so much happening in the script that it would never be dull, but I want to try and find ways of kind of getting those depths of his character. And so it's been really interesting kind of finding who David is and how he has grown over time and sort of how he's suppressed himself in many respects.
Yes, very much so.
Right? And especially as this season where we are at right now, he's just starting to kind of spend that time of going back and looking at who he once was and trying to make some decisions of should he be reconnecting with that in some way.
His first relationship from the play or season zero, depending on what the audience is with Rachel. So talk to me about his relationship with Rachel when he was with her and now that he isn't with her. And hasn't been for a while.
Yeah. So, and that's, this is the perfect thing to talk about after what we were just discussing, right? So David and Rachel first got together. That's sort of, you know, the time in which he made that conscious decision to be the very kind of safe and I don't want to say neutral, but, you know, kind of smooth a lot of those rough edges and wilder aspects of himself out because of how much he valued the relationship that he had with Rachel, right? And there was nothing wrong with that because it was a very loving relationship that they had. And he really kind of threw himself in its entirety into that relationship to be there for her. And so that inability for her to share that secret, I think, is really what is just so gutting for him, that he can't get her to open up, even though he has invested himself in its entirety to that relationship, I think is really where that fracture runs so deep. And yet, for all of that, the thing that I think is just so interesting about how this is all written is that they still have a relationship even after all of this has happened, right? And obviously because Tommy and Rachel are brother and sister, that naturally...
You kind of have to be, you know.
Yeah,
They can't divorce themselves from seeing each other.
Right. But they still have something there and how it's evolving. They're still finding their way around it,
yes,
right? Everything's still too raw to really know what it is.
Considering where we are, we're only 6 months into the timeline.
Right.
And they're going to have a ways to go. She'll be much more at ease with Tommy before she is with David. There's no question about that.
Yeah.
Even stuff with season three, as I'm writing right now, I'm still trying to figure out, well, they're still trying to figure out where they are with each other.
Right. And it was fun listening to your character, Jason, at the poker game, because you're sort of, you're reliving all of this, all the story that everybody else knows and has sort of come to terms with. And you're like, what the...
Yeah, to some degree, I'm the audience. I mean, if I were coming in season one, I would definitely be the audience. But it's more of just a fact of that's who Jason is. He's a blank slate of an enigma, for lack of a better way of putting it. We're not completely sure what to make of him. And I don't think David is sure what to make of him either, or Tommy for that matter.
Yeah. And it's interesting, too. There's a line where Jason says, well, more of a friend with Tommy than with David. And I won't spoil anything, but I'm keen to see how that continues to play out for the rest of the season.
Yeah, he does seem to have that crush on Tommy. We'll see if David has something to worry about or not. So let's get to Tommy then.
So this is where you finding Dan to play Tommy was just such an interesting contrast in styles, right?
Oh God, yeah.
Because Dan as an actor actually reminds me quite a bit of myself when I was a younger actor, where what I couldn't do with talent, I would make up with enthusiasm. But Dan, curse him, is both talented and enthusiastic.
Yes, without question.
But I guess my larger point here is that he's the volatile one, if you will, very driven by emotion and sort of riding the ups and downs of things. And so that sort of stability that David wants to provide for Rachel, he's now trying to do the same thing for Tommy. But there's this added complication of how they arrived, you know, together. Right. And so there's all this guilt that factors in as part of it as well. And yet the love is real. Right. It's undeniable. And so that's where I think for David, it's such an interesting thing for an actor is just trying to deal with all of those components in a very sort of real way. But what's great about Tommy is he's able to pull David out from himself in many respects and helps him kind of spark back to that joy for life that maybe he indulged in a bit more when he was in his youth, right?
And whereas David and Rachel, whenever there was a conflict, it would fester.
Mm-hmm.
With David and Tommy, there might be an explosion, but they come out on the other side and they're stronger for it.
Yeah. The nice thing about Tommy is he forces honesty because he's not going to just let something sit and stew. He'll react to it. And that kind of creates that near-term chaos, if you will. Yeah. But it forces you to kind of contend with it and be, again, honest with yourself about what's going on. And it's also been interesting to see how you've written Tommy, where he starts to get a little bit more acceptance about things as well and doesn't immediately flare up as much as maybe he might have.
Yeah, there's growth. I mean, season two is... it's volatile to start with, dealing with his injuries and everything like that. And there was a really dark time for David and Tommy. But once they reached the other side, it was... yeah, there was definitely some growth going on there. Mm-hmm. So another relationship that kind of has evolved over the two seasons, a former rival becoming a good friend, Anthony.
Yeah. And this is, again, having personal friends on the cast is great. Chris, I just love how he does it. And I can, even for all of the stuff from season two, when I haven't seen Chris deliver the lines, I can mentally picture him delivering them. And it's been really interesting to see how Anthony has moved from this, oh, that's the guy that Rachel hooked up with immediately after David, and oh, that's going to be super awkward and natural friction between the two.
Plus the
of
fact
them.
That it doesn't like each other to begin with.
Yeah, exactly. And then that the Gin Crummy episode, right?
Right.
Where David realizes that Anthony's really the guy that he needs to talk to.
Yeah.
And how that marks a bit of a shift. That's kind of some of the only direct interaction they have during this season. But I think I like seeing where Anthony is playing an important role in everybody's lives here. Right. And so kind of keen to see how that continues to move forward.
With you being in California for a good chunk of the season, mm-hmm. obviously not going to have that much to do with Anthony, but there will be scenes. You know, season three is definitely going to have some of that interaction. But yeah, another key relationship that's becoming more and more prominent. I mean, it was always prominent, but it was strained, but it's coming a little bit more into the forefront in season two, his brother Matt.
Yeah, poor Matt. Poor, long-suffering Matt. You know, Matt's been forced to live in David's shadow in many respects, and that's driven by their mother.
Yes.
And sort of how much she depends on David to kind of be the one that she always goes to. And Matt, who is a perfectly wonderful person, loving family, a new father, just has to fight for every kind of ounce of recognition and respect. You know, where I really like the growth between the two of them is how he's used to have that animosity towards David. And it wasn't necessarily anything that David did. It was just sort of because he was the recipient of that focus. And so now as things have moved forward here in season two, they're a little bit more kind of brothers in arms, right? A little bit more unified in there goes mom again, or there goes dad again, for that matter.
Yeah, Dave, you haven't been here for a while. Welcome to my world.
Right. Yeah, he's had to shoulder this burden with David being on the East Coast and being separated from a lot of the maelstrom, if you will. I'm glad that this opportunity that David has to go home again and they can reconnect as well.
He seems to have I don't know if unique is the right word for it, relationship with his sister-in-law, Lisa. There's obviously a bit of a backstory that we haven't learned yet, but yeah, talk to me about their relationship.
Yeah, there is a lot of patience that is needed for David's mother. There's a different kind of patience that's needed for Lisa, because she just has so much to say and can't help but get it all out there.
Oh, yeah.
But she's also one of the people who sort of, for lack of a better description, cares the most. Mm-hmm. And I think because of her unique position, kind of sees everything mm-hmm. In a way that other people can't because they're too close to it, having married into the family. And she gets some of the same kind of crap from David and Matt's mom. But I think she's able to get perspective on things in a way that's harder for many of the other folks.
She gets David.
Yeah.
Probably more than David gets himself.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And they've got some shared history that David needs to lean on a little bit more, mm-hmm. right?
Yes, definitely. And we've already hinted at David's mom.
Yeah.
But two thorns in his side, his mother, Alice, and his father, Mark.
Oh, and such different ways, too.
Oh, yes.
Both are very good at saying the wrong things at the right time. And I love everybody in the cast, but, you know, Will and Kathy, who play them, are just so phenomenal. They get to have so much fun with those roles. And
both of them, Tempest and Teapots.
Yeah, exactly. And so I write every so often. I've written some plays, and I was very fortunate to have Kathy in the very first play I ever wrote. And I had her as the very kind of florid, histrionic kind of character as well.
Which she plays
something
so
that
well.
Kathy's specialty.
Oh, God,
yeah, exactly. But as over the top as she is really desperate for that connection. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think she's so afraid of losing it that she grabs on too tight.
And pushes away at the same time.
Right. Everything out of her mouth is that sort of velvet backhand, right? Mm. Where she doesn't necessarily see it as being mean-spirited, but it always comes across with a little bit of salt.
Yeah. Yeah. And Nat certainly takes it that way.
Yeah, exactly. And then compare that to his dad, who delights in embarrassing David at every wow. opportunity that he can. And in some respects, it's not even that he's going out of his way to do it. It's just his default mode, right?
It's easy.
Oh, I'm going to remember every single embarrassing thing that has ever happened and bring it up at the most inopportune time.
The very first scene of the very first episode.
Exactly.
What was sex between the two siblings like? I mean, where do you start with?
And yeah, and Will's great. He's another one that I can always sort of envision how he's doing the character. And he's one of those people who every little thing that he does, just he throws like a little nuance in and it makes me laugh every time. And so, you know, it's really interesting though with where things are at right now in the season where there's a big friction point between the two of them, right?
Yes. The and two so of them meaning?
Meaning David and his father.
Okay.
Yeah. David's always kind of had the, oh, there goes my dad again, embarrassing me. Now here's something that is much more kind of fundamental between the two of them. And so it's an interesting shift.
The last scene before the hiatus was mm-hmm. a huge friction point. I mean,
exactly.
You're somewhere on the road right now.
Right. I mean, literally friction. There's tires skidding on the road. Right?
Exactly. But yeah, so hopefully things will work out after we come back, which will be the Sunday after your interview.
Good. I hope I've teased everything up sufficiently.
There we go. So obviously you know what's happening in season two, and I've mm-hmm. hinted at a couple things that could be happening in season three, but what would you like to see happen with David?
Well, you know, I'm looking forward to David and Tommy getting to be David and Tommy for a little while, right?
As opposed to?
Well, they're David and Tommy as opposed to David with Tommy. They're sort of dealing with their own issues separately right now.
Right.
And they haven't had the luxury of just kind of having some time of being themselves and not having so much drama around them. And there's always going to be drama, of course. But just kind of getting back to their core selves with each other. I think beyond that, beyond their relationship, I'm really keen to see how Rachel evolves now that she's been on the show and was able to share her past. And she's starting to figure out who she's going to be from here on out. I'm keen to see how her story moves forward as well.
A question which we didn't touch upon earlier is what David's reaction to that?
Yeah, there's a few lines in there about not even ready to talk about it. And it's the kind of thing that I would think as David, he would obviously have been there and be as understanding and supportive as possible. And it's the kind of thing that I think he would have a really hard time understanding why she couldn't have shared it with him, given how close their relationship was, despite that she obviously had this inability to do so.
But obviously it wasn't about him.
Right, exactly. And I think that's the key thing that he'll always have to remember. Their breakup is the fact that he feels she can't be honest with him. And it's, he takes that as a personal affront, right?
When it actually had absolutely nothing to do with him.
Exactly. Exactly. So I think there's some reconciling that David will need to have to do with that and sort of develop that broader view of things. Outside of that, I mean, it's just been really delightful to see how all the other characters come together. I love hearing the Breen and Jax. You know, those are characters that David hardly interacts with at all. Mm-hmm. So as a listener, it's like, oh, there's this whole other world that's happening out there. Yeah.
They don't exist in a vacuum by any stretch of the imagination at all.
Yeah. So, you know, it's neat, really neat seeing all the threads come together. And on the same token, you know, from another plot line, really heartbreaking to see what's happening with Al's character.
Obviously, we don't know a lot about it yet. I'm trying to remember. Yes, I believe he's already mentioned that he has the symptoms of Alzheimer's. He talked mm-hmm. to John about that, right?
Yep. Yep.
Listen to me asking you. I'm the one that wrote the damn thing.
So, yeah, all of these separate conversations that are happening, and he's not sharing that news because he's probably waiting for the right time. And so he's got to kind of pass things off as, oh, I just forgot or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of real legitimate emotion that comes out of there. And, oh, I might add, just going back to when Rachel was on the show, you know, I want to give you a lot of credit, Peter. There's a lot of really great writing in there.
Thank you. And again, I have to give Jenny credit for some of that too.
Sure, absolutely. But people really having to kind of face difficult things that have happened and recognizing what that has meant. And that's not easy to capture in a way that doesn't sometimes become too maudlin or kind of over the top. And I think you struck a really nice line with that.
Thank you.
That's an episode that is almost entirely Rachel, right?
Yes, it was her moment.
It was really nice to be able to experience something very different.
Yeah, that episode was, I mean, even from the opening, we didn't have the 2 and 2 theme. We had mm-hmm. the Bethany Baker Show theme. Mm-hmm. I tried to make it as stylistically different as possible so we knew that we were in something else.
Yep.
And so, behind the scene moment for you that sticks out. You weren't there for the party horn story, mm-hmm. you know, that everybody who's there will still talk about and actually came up in a couple of the interviews. But
it's how Dan and I had to make kissing sounds, which involves kissing the back of our hands or our fists, which it's sort of like those old radio dramas where you exactly. find things to sound like other things. And so there, Dan and I are kissing the backs of our hands while we're looking at each other from across the room. And it was just sort of one of those.
Well, would you rather have kissed for real?
I mean, if it worked on audio, well, that's fine. But it's just one of those inherently surreal kind of things that you do as part of this, which at first you're like, oh, this is, how kooky is this? And then you just don't even give a second thought about it. It was like, oh, all right, we got to kiss. All right, kiss my hand.
Whatever
so that and just the all manner of off-color remarks that we make while we were recording season one, you know, you already have plenty of puns in the script to begin with, but we certainly...
The titles are,
yes,
are very punny.
A testament to that. But there was a lot more of that happening in between takes as well, which I really appreciate.
Well, Adam, thank you for coming and... talking.
Yeah, thank you, Peter. It's really been rewarding being a part of this, and I can't wait for everybody to hear the rest of what season 2 has to offer.
Great. Thanks again.
All right, take care. All right.